Well, good morning. It is good to be here with you all this morning. I don't know many of you. There's a few faces out there that I recognize and know a little bit. So my wife and I come from Mifflin County, about 2 hours west of here, and neither of us grew up there. But that's where we live now. We go to church in the beautiful Big Valley, Kishikaquillis Valley. It's a beachy church there. It's the church that I would say I grew up at. I'm glad to be here this morning. It's just my wife and I. We do not have any living children. That's part of our story. And we are blessed to live the life that God has given us. And I've known Lyndon a bit over the past several years, and told him just enough probably to pique his interest about my story, about why I'm at Anabaptist Foundation, how I got there. And sometimes I wonder a bit, how did I get there? But I attribute a lot of why I'm there to my father. So this is not at all a Father's Day message, but it is a message to you fathers, and a call to you fathers to think and to think deeply. And whether you're a father or not, you can apply this to, ladies can apply this to their lives as well. I also recognize, you know, I said I have no living children, that when you talk to fathers and you're not a father yourself, people might say, oh, that's interesting. So I do have a perspective that may be different because I don't have children, but I would just remind us that we all were a child. So we all have experiences. I'm blessed that you all do a Missions Sunday here. I think that is good. I would also suggest that if we're just doing a Mission Sunday, the one Sunday of the month, we may be missing something. I believe we live out of who we are. The Bible talks about us being stewards, and we are either a good steward or we're a bad steward. There is no in between. But we get to steward what God has given us. My wife and I get to steward what God has given us. You get to steward what God has given you. And we need to be faithful in that stewardship. So, I'm going to tell a bit of my story first, and then talk about some other things as well. One of the things I was thinking of, one of the verses I thought about when I was preparing for this was the verse in Proverbs 22, I think it is. Yeah, 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. So one of the things my father and I, we have a very good relationship, and sometimes he's fussing at my wife and I about how much we travel and how much we're gone. Like, he can't keep track of where we are, and I say, Dad, you know, the apple didn't fall far from the tree. And so, it's just, you know, as you fathers raise your children will pick up your interests. So when you're giving money to the child to give to Mary, which is wonderful, they will know, though, if that's actually Dad's heart or if he's doing it because he needs to. They will pick that up. So we all say, or we know the saying, more is caught than is taught. But we all often don't actually live that way. We think that, you know what, if I tell them a certain thing, they will catch it. But maybe they will, maybe they won't. So currently I'm working at Anabaptist Foundation as the administrator of the foundation. I've been there for 8 years now. And if you'd have asked me when I was growing up, what do you think you're going to do? Well, Anabaptist Foundation, or AF, Anabaptist Financial, wasn't even in existence then. But in my wildest dreams, I would not have said, I'm going to end up in an organization like this. I would have quicker said, I'm going to be a missionary somewhere. Or I would have maybe said, I'll be an ordained preacher quicker than what I'm doing now. Or selling auto parts. Being a salesman somewhere. Like, everything I've learned about sales, I've gotten from my dad. I love sales. I'd love to sell you auto parts, except not anymore because I'm not there anymore. So, what does Anabaptist Foundation do? So, just to explain a bit, Anabaptist Foundation, Anabaptist Financial, it's two separate 501c3s, one board, separate because Anabaptist Foundation works with charity dollars, people giving money away to church and charity. Anabaptist Financial deals with investments and loans, and so segregation of funds. So it's best to keep two separate companies. But the thing I love about Anabaptist Foundation is helping people give money away to church and charity. You know, I get to work with mostly happy people, because generous people are people who aren't stingy, who aren't grumpy. So I get to work with the cream of the crop in our church circles. Sometimes I think maybe that's not fair that I get to do that. Now, it is also true, you can have people that have lots of money who give money away because they have to. And when you find those people, I will just say, I don't have near as much fun when working with them, because they're doing it out of obligation. It's not actually who they are. So like the man that was mentioned in Sunday school, he gets the $40,000 raise. There's a reason for that. And that man needs to figure out, why is God doing that? Is that so he can actually eat more steak? Or is it so that he can bless his neighbors and give more? Like, I love what Mary's doing out there, and I don't know, I'm not 100% sure what the situation is there, as far as I know she was under, I think, D&I at one point. I don't know if she is now, but I would just encourage you as a church, do the mission thing with her. She doesn't need to, okay, do whatever you want, but she doesn't need to be under an organization. If our churches would be having the Marys out there and supporting them, we would be so much further ahead. We wouldn't have to have as many mission organizations. I'm all for mission organizations, but I'm saying we need to go back to the church doing missions rather than saying, I'll send you to go do missions. We'll send Mary, and then we feel good because we're giving money to Mary while I sit here making some money, giving some money in the offering, but really living life for myself. And what I saw my dad model was him not living life for himself. And I told him a couple weeks ago, I said, you know, Dad, I'm supposed to do this talk, and I'm the title is something about, like, raising the bar, or dad's when dads raise the bar. And he said, oh, Mark, just be careful. I know he would feel some discomfort to know that I'm talking about him. But it's actually not about my dad. It's about my Lord. It's about his Lord that he served and that he still serves. So I was born in northern Indiana. My dad was drafted. He went to Michigan. There was a nursing home there. Mom was there. She was from Clona, Iowa. They got married, and when they got married, the church in Clona, Iowa, and the church in actually where I attend now, they were both having struggles. And mom and dad didn't feel like it was wise to bring their family there to either setting to raise their children. So they lived in northern Indiana for 14 years. And then we moved to Pennsylvania, and that's a whole other story. But while in Indiana, I was 8 years old when we moved to Pennsylvania, so I have some pretty good memories of Indiana there. My father started a business called Epco Sales, just Earl Peachy Company, real simple there. and that thing is still going. Friends of ours bought it, and some of my earliest memories actually are sorting bolts and nuts. Now, if you're not familiar with it at all, it's like, why would you sort bolts and nuts? Well, my dad, he was a frugal man, and it was cheaper to buy unplated bolts. So often, if you go to Lowe's and you buy a bolt, it's silver. Well, it's not naturally silver. It was plated. That plating was put on there. And so he would buy them unplated, so it'd be black and greasy, and then he'd ship them to, I think, somewhere in Chicago, and they would do the plating. And then when they send them back, they would come, I mean, there'd be 3/8 by 2 bolts, and there'd be 1/4 inch nuts, and there'd be all kinds of different things. And so what child can't pick out the different sizes and put it in the different boxes? And so Dad got us involved with work. You could say, oh, child labor. No, actually not child labor. It was actually getting us involved. We didn't need things. We needed things to do, and we needed Dad to show us how. And that is what Dad did for us. So I always remember the business. Another thing I remember, early memories, is church. We always went to church. I can't tell you one Sunday that we didn't go to church unless somebody was sick for I don't know when. And trust me, it wasn't just Sunday. It was also Wednesday night. It didn't matter. When there was church, we went to church. I think I was probably 11, 12 years old before I remember the first time we got Dad convinced we don't need to go to church that night. And that was because we were having a family reunion and a bunch of relatives were coming in, and there was someone going to come in over that time. And Dad was like, no, we can go to church. And we were like, Dad, the cousins are going to show. Okay, that was the first time. Today, so many of us, at the drop of a hat, are we going to church tonight? It should not be a question that your child has. If they do, why? Why do they have that? The other thing I remember my dad, family devotions, first thing. And, things have changed some. It seems the world runs a lot faster than it did back in the 80s. Like, you got to start earlier. But I also realize that's different communities. I don't know what are we in Lebanon County here? It's probably very different than Lancaster County. So you guys are probably starting at 8 o'clock in the morning. Does that sound about right? Get up and get to work don't get up at 8, but, I remember we would have devotions in the morning at 7:30, pretty much every morning before Dad went on his routes selling bolts or auto parts when we moved to Pennsylvania. And those times have stuck with me. And the one prayer that I would have said my dad prayed a lot that made a big impression on me, and I've asked my siblings and they don't remember the prayer, so I do not know, was it one time and it stuck, or was it many times? But I remember him praying, God, please lay it on the customers' hearts to pay their bills. Okay, I realized we were poor, and we were raised poor. And I remember thinking, we are always going to be poor. My dad today, I would not call him rich. He's very rich. In worldly standards, I would not call him rich. He could have a lot more money in his pocket if he would have made some different choices, and if he would not have allowed me to make some of the choices that I did. So, church, family, vacations, not so much. So, living in northern Indiana, we had grandparents in Iowa, we had grandparents in Pennsylvania, so if you went somewhere, we went to one of the grandparents, which was our vacation, and it was very good. And in my growing up years, I remember, I think, one time when we as a family went on a, what I would call a vacation. And I'm not scarred by it, or just because we just went one time. So I'm saying, fathers, you need to spend time with your children in your normal everyday life. If in the cadence of your life you're not including your children, I wonder what will happen. I remember many evenings working together. So when we moved to Pennsylvania, my dad bought a step van, like a UPS truck, and put racks in that thing and loaded that thing with auto parts. We had oil filters and oil and antifreeze, and he'd go out on these routes and he'd go to inspection station. Wherever you're taking your garage to get it inspected, that's the type of place he would go to. And he would stock the garage with, you know, once a week. Very unique market there. And that's what I grew up doing, riding around with him in the summertime. And he would sell his product and we would, yeah. In the evenings, we would fill that truck back up, working with Dad. Very, very formational for me. Dad also did not have employees. Very little over the years. It's just like it didn't really work for it. I'm not sure why, but he wasn't the type of guy to go hire a bunch of people and then have them work for him. So as long as I can remember, my dad was a preaching deacon. I think it was after I was born that he was ordained, but I cannot remember anything different. I do remember numerous times him shutting the business down for a week and going doing a week of revivals. Totally, totally not good for business from a financial standpoint. Some churches, yeah, they did okay in giving him a love offering. Some, not so much. But that didn't matter. I also knew from a young age, from my dad's prayers and devotions, that my dad was concerned about the missions and the missionaries. And he had a heart for missions. My mom tells the story of when they were young married. They had three little children at that time. They had, in 74, 75, and 76, they had children. And I think about 78 or somewhere there, he decided, there's a man from his church that was on a mission board and had a work in Belize. And he said, hey, Dad, Earl, why don't you go with me? And Dad was all in. Okay. Little children, mom's not so much into having Dad go. But she allowed him to go because she thought, if he just goes, it'll take care of that itch. And then he won't be having these thoughts anymore. She says that was a mistake. Laughingly, she says that, not seriously. But I always knew he had a heart for missions, always. And heart for other people, heart for his customers. Those customers he'd see on a weekly basis. He built relationship there. He was able to speak into their lives. He didn't have to be on the mission field to be doing this. You know, some people that grow up, children that grow up with their fathers who are very involved in ministry, they will walk away from the Lord. It happens. Those stories are way too rampant out there. And I don't know why that is. But I always knew that my dad was genuine. And us children have all following the Lord. I think it was who Dad was when he was home. I don't think it was that he was gone a lot. It was who he was when he was home. And my dad had failings. I remember numerous times, or a number of times, I should say, my dad saying sorry about whatever the issue was. We knew Dad wasn't perfect, but Dad was real. And to me, that was a key thing that allowed us as children to say, you know what Dad has? Yeah. We want something like that as well. So, when I was 18 years old, I believe it was, my parents were asked to go to Kenya, Africa, to serve as missionaries. And I was super excited. My family was pretty much all excited as well. We have this business. What are you going to do? So I was 19 when I actually went, and my brother would have been, if I was 19, he'd have been about 22, and then a brother that would have been about 25, and a sister in between the two of them. So it was decided they're going to stay home. The brothers will run the business while dad and mom, myself and my younger brother go to Kenya. Again, probably not a wise business move, but it worked. Went to Kenya, absolutely loved it. Loved living in Africa. And came home not because my father wanted to come home, but because of some circumstances, it just seemed like it was the right thing to do. And so, came home from Kenya. Oh, by the way, I was in Kenya over Y2K. This is a bunny trail. But some of you remember Y2K, right? Anybody remember the scare? What's going to happen when midnight hits? You know what was always a little funny to me? Which midnight? We're going to hit it 8 hours before you all over here. Is it our midnight or is it your midnight? You know, when's this thing going to happen? But our worlds can be so small. We think our world is Lebanon County. There's way more than Lebanon County. There's way more than America. The world is so much bigger than that. One story about Kenya. So malaria was obviously a thing in Africa. It still is some. I don't know if I ever had malaria. Never got tested for it. I'm sure I had malaria. Don't know if I had malaria. Got sick like I had malaria, right? Took the medicine. And this was, we were going to have a unit meeting about 3 hours away the next day with another station. And the night before, my brother and I, I was not feeling well and was sick, and we had decided that my brother, younger brother, was going to stay with me. And the next morning, got up, and I felt better. I didn't drive that day. I did a lot of driving in Kenya. It's where I learned my love of city driving. Oh, as long as you get your nose in, you're doing good. You just, you know, if there's three lanes, make it eight. It doesn't matter. You just, so much fun. And I truly do love city driving. So I felt better. Went along. Normal day, right? We get a call in the afternoon, and we had a gardener that was taking care of our compound. There was numerous houses, and he would do the, we called him the gardener, but he would do the lawn and the shrubs and that type of thing. And we got a call saying, hey, Sammy got taken to jail. Okay. Yeah, two of the neighbor boys were found dead, just like, I think it was two houses down. One outside the fence and one inside the fence, I think is how it was. And so in Kenya, if there's a crime, you are guilty until you're proven innocent. So they just come in, anybody that's there, whoosh, sweep them up, take them to jail. Were my parents ever thankful, myself included, that us boys were not at home that day? Okay. Sometime later, we had a conversation with one of my grandmothers, my mother's mother, and she said, you know, I woke up and I knew I needed to pray. I'm telling you, if you wake up in the middle of the night and you feel like you need to pray for Mary or whoever else it is, you heed the Spirit and you pray. I truly think my grandmother's prayers is what kept us from being there that day. I loved being in Kenya. Came home from Kenya, worked in the family business. By then I was 21 and worked there several years. and then was asked to go to Choice Books. And sure, love to do Choice Books. Both of my siblings had worked at Hillcrest. Two of my siblings had worked at Hillcrest. When we came home, my other brother started teaching school, and he's finishing up his 20th or 24th year or something there, I think. And so we went. Dad always told us, if God calls you to go somewhere, you go. The business is not going to keep you from going if God calls you somewhere. So, Choice Books, why sure. They needed somebody in Georgia, South Carolina. Well, guess what? One of my really good friends that I had gotten to know in Kenya lived in Georgia, in South Carolina. So this is perfect. I go do Choice Books, Georgia, South Carolina, get to go to the city, Atlanta, to service the racks and live in Abbeville and be buddies with my buddy there, right? Worked out great. And so did that for a year and a half. Came back home, worked in the business again, became a salesman, was out on the road, you know, doing sales a lot every week. We had set routes that we did. And in 2006, middle of 2006, I got asked to go to Mountain View Nursing Home, which is how I know Mary and Roy's daughter Heidi. And so, okay, when I got the phone call, my parents are in Kenya again, doing furlough replacement for like 4 months. So I called Dad and I said, hey, got this call. Well, he's wondering what I think. Well, I sort of think I should. And he's like, okay. And this was like for 07, starting in 07. Well, they'd have taken me right away, but I had told him there's no way I can until beginning of 07. He just said, okay. By that time, we had some employees. But when I left to go to Mountain View, January of 07, we did not have a salesman to replace me on my route, which meant my dad had to do a lot more work and my brother. And it was a little crazy. But my dad said, if you're supposed to go, it's going to work out. Sure enough, 6 weeks later, something, 2 months later, they had another salesman, and it worked out. How did I get to Mountain View? I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure the fellow that lived, in South Carolina, him and his family had come to Mountain View to be discipleship leaders, and they knew me from being down there. I'm pretty sure that's how my name got there. Okay? Remember, we'd gone to Kenya. I've now been to South Carolina. Now I'm in Mountain View. Was there for 3 years. I would say the best thing about those 3 years was meeting my wife. So before that, and by the time I went there, I think it was 27, I think, I had just never met a lady that I couldn't live without. I mean, that's just the way it was until I met Shirley. I was like, okay, yeah, it'd be hard to imagine not being able to do life with her. So I don't know if VS is a thing here in your church. My father, it was just the expected that we're going to go volunteer somewhere. I'm not going to ask for a raise of hands of how many of you have done a year of VS. But I wish for our churches that every church, every young person would go into a year of voluntary service. There are so many blessings. I look at my time at Mountain View. I used to say, I'm never going to work in a nursing home. That's why I went to Choice Books. I mean, like, cleaning up people? Are you kidding me? Oh, I just couldn't imagine. So Dean sounded better, because then you're just dealing with the young guys, and that's much better. But I also did CNA work. I'm telling you that what I learned in those years, I actually stayed there 3 years, incredible in life skills later. But my dad ordered his life in such a way that allowed us to go into VS. He didn't build his business in such a way that, you know what, you can't go because I have to have you here, even though it cost him money by having us go. I would just encourage you, fathers, allow your children, encourage your children to go spend time. And I would have, you know, I'd be trying to recruit young men, and they'd say, Mountain View? No way. Not a nursing home. I'm going to the foreign. I'm going to Africa. Like, I'm going to do real mission work. You know, I used to think to myself, those poor people over there, you'd be much better off if you'd come here first, and then you'd go over there. You learn so much when you live with a group of people that aren't your siblings, and you have to get along, and you learn how to take care of elderly people when they can't do anything in return. Where did I learn my love for old people? So, my father, we went to church all the time, right? But guess what? There was no running around outside after church. We had to stay in the auditorium until I don't know what age we were. I think close to 16. I'm telling you, we were the only ones. Praise the Lord. Amen. Praise the Lord is right. So I always felt like I grew up just a bit weird. But one thing my father allowed me to do is go out to an elderly man and sit with him in his van after church if I wanted to. He would give candy to the children. And he hauled some Amish, and so he had this big 15-passenger van, and while he's waiting for his wife, he'd be sitting there, and I'd hop in the passenger seat, and we'd just chat about life. I really think that is where my love for elderly came alive. And I'm telling you, in our world, I guarantee you, in the area that you're living, you have sad, lonely, elderly neighbors. They're there. They're all around you. Take your children and go visit them. Bless them. Hopefully you're all doing that on a weekly basis. But do that for your children. So, came home from Mountain View. Had met my wife. We got married in 10. Coming up on 16 years end of this month. And right at that, in 10, my dad had my brother and I buy into the business with him. So we became partners, three-way partners, 33, 34. And Dad, I think, did that because he wanted us to get some buy-in, or do some buy-in. You know, my wings were fairly, you know, he's scared I'm going to fly away again. And that was a good thing for us to do. And then 2 years later, everybody came. He wanted me to be the managing partner because, you know, he's on a mission board and he's doing all these things as well. And so it worked well. It really did. But one thing that happened after we got married, I was 31 when we got married. She was 34. The calls started coming. Hey, can you come? Literally every year we'd get these calls, even sometimes I think more than once in a year. And it wasn't about us. People just saw an available couple, I think. And I mean, at the 5-year mark, we were called by a counseling ministry because they needed marriage counselors. Yeah, that's exactly what we did, Lyndon. I remember we were driving. I know where we were driving when we got the call. I take this call, and this guy tells me what he is, and then we're in a bad spot, and so we get cut off, and we sat there and just laughed. Like, us marriage counselors? You've got to be kidding. We've only been married, like, not even 5 years. It was just about 5 years. Anyway, when I called him back, I tried not to be laughing, but if you're available, God will use you. So we get all these requests, and always, okay, what about the business? What about the business? You know, now I'm a partner, you know, can't fly away anymore. And Dad has always said, if you feel like you should go, that's what you should do. So in 2014, we get a call from Hillcrest. Y'all know of Hillcrest in Arkansas, nursing home down there. I actually serve on the mission board that oversees Hillcrest, and it's been going since the 1950s. It's a county home, by the way. And my wife and I prayed about it, and we said, you know, we think we should go. And this has been right after our child loss. We've had three early-term losses. And by the way, you realize really quickly how child-centric our communities are when you don't have children. And bless God for all the children, absolutely. If you can have them, have them. That's just 100% for children. But never forget the people that don't fit the box. There's actually more conversation to be had than about how that birth went or about my child. You should have those conversations, but I'm just saying, don't forget the people around you that don't fit the box. So right in the cusp of that, we're asked to go to Hillcrest, and we say, this is, yes, this, invest into young people again. And so I said something to my dad and my brother, and they were like, how's this going to work? And I said, well, I don't know either, but we can surely make it work. And I don't know how many of you know David Souter, but David Souter is a business advisor with AF, German Baptist, long beard. Love the man. And we got him in to come look at the business and tell us, hey, this could this work or could this not? So we had multiple meetings, and I had even said, you know what? I'll sell my share back to you at the same price you sold it to me. I don't need to make a lick on it. Foolish decision from a financial standpoint. David came to our house one day. He had had meetings with a number of us, and the different couples, the three different. And he just said, you know, Mark, it's not going to work. He said, you can go, but it's not going to work. I will just say, I cried over that choice of not going more than I ever cried about our loss of children. Now, my dad had said, don't ever let the business hold you back. Now what do you do? And you know, the other week, a week ago, we were with my mom and dad. I'd helped them get a new phone, and we went for some lunch or some supper, and I told him what I'm doing, and he said, you know, Mark, he said, I still don't feel good about that one decision. But you know what? My God knew all that. I don't have time to go into some pieces of it, but he knew that. And that's what I love about my God. Like, our God, he steers the course of history. You look at the Old Testament. I don't know if you all read the Old Testament here or not, but I was shocked one day in our church when a young lady, I'd say she's probably about 25, admitted that she had really never read the Old Testament, because we're New Testament. Like, why would you read the Old Testament? I'm like, if you want to know the heart of God, you read the Old Testament. You see it. And it gives you so much strength for these hard times, because you know what? Okay, God's up to something. Well, guess what? It was that. So we made that decision to not go. It was tough. I'd say it was tough on the whole family. Don't know if we all quite realize it at the same degree, but my dad and my brother saw something. They saw what happened. And I bless God actually that it did happen. Okay? So in 2017, now we hadn't gone to Hillcrest, but we had gone out there because of the role I was supposed to take. I really got an inside look into how it operates. And then I was asked, would you be willing to serve the slate to serve on the board that is over Hillcrest? Well, you know what? If we can't go, why don't we be helpful that way? And my wife had some health difficulties. She's had back surgeries and going to Africa, probably not such a good idea, which is totally fine. But, you know, this is a way to do missions by being on a mission board. And again, I think the reason my name came up, the fellow that was at Mountain View was now on the board at Mission Interest Committee, and I suspect he said, you know what, I wonder if Mark would be willing to serve. So we said, yeah, we will do that. And so I got an inside look at Hillcrest, and then you're on the board, miles ahead of a board member that comes on that has never been there. So Reach 2017 was down here in Lancaster somewhere, and they have a pre-day for ministry leaders, and they had something that day. And so because I was on MIC, I went to this Reach event, and I'm walking from one session to another and find this guy beside me called Richie Lauer. I didn't know Richie Lauer. I'm sure I had met him because I'd go to AF seminars, some business seminars, and he's like, hey, what are you up to these days? And, you know, just chit-chatting. Is like, hey, have you ever thought about doing something different? And okay. Well, of course we did. I mean, we thought about it often. And he told me later, he said, you know, I called your father-in-law. He called my father-in-law, Shirley's father, or had a conversation with him, and he told him, my father-in-law said, I mean, you can ask, but you're not going to get him. He's involved in the business. So now what do you do? So again, we got David Souter in. And when I said something to my dad and brother, they're like, yeah, hey, yeah. Totally different than the time before. And, of course, yeah, so we got David Souter in again because, okay, what do we do? My dad was wanting to step out of or sell his shares of the business. My brother wasn't wanting to buy him. I wasn't wanting to buy him. Like, if I'd have stayed to buy them all and do business for another 20 years, we didn't have children. I'm not doing a sacred-secular divide here. I'm not trying to. But we just felt like, why build this business up for what? And working for the foundation, we could help donors give money to charities, and not just one charity, but hundreds of charities? Oh, wonderful. So David came out, and we talked about it, and ultimately we sold the business. And I've heard my dad say, you know, and we sold it to customers of ours, some brothers that were in partnership, and Dad has said, you know, that was the second best thing that could ever happen, and maybe the best. Most fathers want their sons to take on what they've started. But my dad sees now where I and my brother both are. And actually, my brother ended up working for AF as well after going to Kenya for a term of service. And my father is, somewhere along the line, he started working for All Nations Bible Translations, State College, ABT, part-time. And he's actually working there full-time. And so I told you he was a preaching deacon at our church. We released him at about age 65 or 65 probably, because he was always preaching, going places and preaching. And we were like, you know what, he's still got life in him. Let him do this stuff while he still has life. And he's been to, he goes with Leroy Lapp to Kurdistan quite a bit. He's been to Nepal. He's been to India. He's been many different places, and places in the U.S. here, preaching. And some of the people from ABT started a church in Phillipsburg, and they said, hey, Earl, would you come up here and help us get started? And so they're actually living there right now for 2 years. They need the gray hair and probably some stability with, you know, that may come with age. And so that's what they're doing. And I keep telling Dad, look, Dad, you keep going as long and as hard as you can until you can't. I just told him just Friday night we were together with some family, and I just said, because they're trying to decide about another thing that's sort of connected also but would mean a move, and I don't know that they will do it, but I just said, I'm just so glad you're not asking about going to Florida for 4 months or 6 months. Now, I have nothing against going. A person can go into Florida. Don't hear me say, I had a grandfather that actually spent a lot of time in Florida. He needed to spend a lot of time in Florida because of health issues. There's more places than just Florida that you could go, though, for health issues. But I'm just saying, like, I am so blessed. My father is still just as concerned about people's souls as he was when I was growing up. And I guarantee you the grandchildren are watching that. One of the conversations I had with him soon after we sold the business, you know, of course, there's some extra cash around. He's like, you know, Mark, I think I might buy a pickup. I was like, Dad, you're buying a pickup? I mean, we've never grown up being pickup people. I mean, if you had a pickup, it was because you needed a pickup. But, you know, some guys need a pickup to haul their ego around. I mean, that's just not, just doesn't stack. And I said, Dad, why would you get a pickup? Well, I've always sort of wanted a pickup. I said, so would you get rid of the Cobalt then? Or, well, no. I said, okay, so you'd have three vehicles for you and Mom. He's like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess. I said, well, hey, Dad, you can do what you want. But I said, remember Josh. That's a grandson. What are you telling him? I'm telling you, the men my age and older are the ones actually who often do the peer pressure thing. The peer pressure often doesn't actually come from the young people where we think it comes. Maybe the hair and some of those things come from that age group. But I'm just saying the peer pressure, when you have your things paid for, when you're not making payments, when you have that, all of a sudden you have that income, what are you going to do with that? Is now when you're going to go buy the green egg or green eggs are a thing of the past even, aren't they? We've gone so far. This steak thing, Roy, you got me on this thing. But I actually have a concern. One of the books that has really impacted me is Where is Lazarus by Gary Miller. Have you all read that book? You all really need to read that book. And he has a chapter in there, and he talks about our eating in America and how good can a steak be? Seriously, the only reason we can do it is because we have money. We say health, health, health. I'm not saying you shouldn't eat healthy, but do not let health and food become your God. So, you know, fathers, one of the privileges I have working for Anabaptist Foundation, we do these youth and family finance seminars where we'll go into a community and do an evening of a number of different topics, giving in the brotherhood, debt, the major expenses. And I've often done the debt topic, and I'm a debt-averse person, so you have to take that with a grain of salt when I talk about debt. But in that topic, we mentioned Nehemiah 5, where they were selling their wives and their children because of the debt that they were in, trying to pay their debt. They were selling their wives and their children. And I usually say, you know, okay, I mean, you haven't sold your wife or your child. Like, there's no way, I mean, like, hello, there's no way we would do that. But I have challenged men And I've said, but wait a minute. What I see so often is you have little Johnny right there beside you. He's growing up. And often, it doesn't 100% work this way, but you're trying to start that business. You've gone in debt to start that business. You're working like crazy. And you actually don't have time to take him fishing tonight. And I'm not saying it's about the children, because my dad didn't take us fishing often either. He did every once in a while. We did a lot of work. But you don't actually have time for the children. Just work. And then little Johnny's growing up. And about the time he gets here, guess what? The business is paid for, the property is paid for, whatever, you're out of debt, and you're just like, oh, I got time for my children. What do you want, Dad? And I tell them, sometimes we sell our wives and our children because our debt load is too high. If you don't have time for your child because your debt load is too high, I beg of you to sell something. And I've had ladies literally crying because I knew it was touching a chord. That man is not being a husband that he should be and a father to his children. So I just say, so my dad did have debt, but it did not consume him. And I would just say, remember that more is caught than is taught. And so we can have Mission Sunday. We can have people give to this offering. But I'm telling you, your children are going to know whether it's a duty that dad is doing or whether it's his heart. And not actually by the amount that he's putting into the offering, but by how he relates in the rest of the areas of life. You know, it talks in Matthew 28 about the Great Commission, or what we call the Great Commission. And it says to go into all the world. And how do we do that? Preach the gospel. I think we need to go. Go is a piece of it. And go into all parts of the world includes Kleinfeltersville. Is that how you say this town? Reinholds. Okay. In Reinholds. I guarantee you in Reinholds you have the sad, the poor, the lonely people. That's part of your going. Your children will know. So often we do this sacred secular divide. We say missions and business. No. If you're in business and you say, I'm going to sell my business so I can go into missions, I'm going to go to Africa to be a missionary, I don't think you'll actually be a missionary over there. You'll be there, but I'm not convinced you'll be a missionary, because if you weren't a missionary with your customers, whatever your customers are, whoever they are, how would you be a missionary? By this will all men know if you're my disciples, if you have love one for another, one to another. And you want to know what the heart of God is? Well, why did Sodom and Gomorrah get destroyed? Who can tell me? Why was Sodom and Gomorrah destroyed? There's multiple reasons, but yes. Because there were so many wicked people living in them. So many wicked people living in them. That is correct. Why else?
Fullness of bread.
And that's where I go back to my steak. And don't pitch me out just because I'm talking about some good food. But we have to think about these things. Ezekiel, not long after, this is what he says. Behold, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom. Pride, fullness of bread, abundance of idleness was in her and in her daughters. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. And they were haughty and committed abomination before me. Therefore I took them away as I saw good. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and the needy. If you want to know the heart of God, if you want to be like God, you need to care about the poor and the needy. And as you raise your family for the Lord, remember, we are all stewards. And we will steward out of, whether we're a good steward or a bad steward, is out of who our master is. You are going to serve whoever your master is. And sometimes we get all hyped up about missions and those type of things. I found this book, What the Amish Teach Us, by Donald Crable. I don't know if any of you have read this or not. But it is a fascinating book, and he makes a comment, and sometimes we don't know we need to do missions. You know, if we could just balance the Anabaptist people, we would serve, the kingdom could be served well. And I'm not trying to uplift the Amish, but I'm just saying there's something key here. Shortly after the tragedy on 2006, October 2nd, 2006, in West Nickel Mines School, we all know what happened there if we're old enough, where the 10 Amish girls were shot, killing 5 of them, and then himself. I interviewed the parent of a child who had died there. In the aftermath of the shooting, the Amish forgave the man and his family. Speaking of how this forgiveness story made headlines in hundreds of media outlets worldwide, the father said, "Our forgiveness reminds me of being the light on the hill. Sometimes our people think we should do more evangelistic work or begin a prison ministry, but our forgiveness story made more of a witness for us all over the world than anything else we could ever do." Another parent agreed, "Maybe it was God's way to let us do some missionary work. God may use the media to help. Maybe God used the media to help spread the word." Amish churches do not engage in evangelism or operate mission agencies, although they may contribute to non-Amish mission projects. And members of Amish groups serve others outside their community by participating in various Anabaptist service and disaster relief organizations. And then he says, "Amish people hope that their collective way of life will glorify God. In sermons, writings, and conversations, they emphasize the importance of letting their light shine." There's an Amish writer, Benuel Blanc, says it this way: "A good Christian can be a good witness in many ways. Living a good example has led more people to Christ than any amount of talking has ever done." Now, we need Mary where she is. Your church needs to visit the poor around here. But I'm just saying, the way you do your life with your family, at home, with your children, is going to speak louder, actually, than if you're going over there and doing a bunch of words to your neighbors. Though you still need to do that. God bless you.